This podcast is proud to be part of the TalkSport Fan Network.
TalkSport. Powered by fans.
The TalkSport Fan Network is proudly supported by McDelivery, bringing you the food you love. McDelivery brings a top-tier lineup of food right to your door. No matter the results, you'll always be winning with McDelivery. Order now on the McDonald's app and you'll get rewards points delivered too, so that ordering today means some tasty rewards for tomorrow. Only via app at participating restaurants. 18 plus rewards registration required. Points only on menu items, delivery fee and terms apply. See mcdonalds.com.
The TalkSport Fan Network is proudly teaming up with Three for Mental Health Awareness Week this year. Beyond the pitch, beyond the results, we're here to connect fans, getting them to embrace the highs and lows of supporting your club, because we're not just fans, we're a team. With 2 in 3 football fans having struggled with their mental health, we understand that life off the pitch can present its own challenges. That's why we're committed to ensuring you have the tools to stay connected with your friends and fellow supporters. Take a moment to connect with your mates. A simple text or an open conversation can make a world of difference. And if they don't respond right away, don't hesitate to follow up. Let's all take a moment to talk more than football.
Johnson floats it in for Aidan Flynn! They've done it!
Gregory, he's in the box, tries to screw him. Is it going to be there?
Yes! Yes!
Oh my word! Oh, it's in!
You're listening to the number one pod for Sheffield Wednesday. This is the Wednesday Till I Die podcast.
EK's on fire. Your defence is terrified. 5 goals in 4 games and we all thought that we'd not signed a striker. How wrong were we? Hello and welcome to Wednesday Till I Die podcast. I'm James Mapping, and with me this week to go over yet another win. I've not said that many times this season. Back-to-back wins for only the second time is Neil. Neil, first of all, mate, how are you? You all right?
I'm very well, James. How are you, mate?
Yeah, all good. You know, we can't stop winning at the moment. You know, three wins in 4 games. It's brilliant. I mean, for those that don't know you, we're recording this sat at the opposite side of the world, quite literally as well. Whereabouts are you, Neil?
I'm in Adelaide in South Australia. It's 7 p.m. on a Sunday night here, so it's bit of a change, probably your usual time for your pod, but certainly not on your end at the minute.
No, it's an early one for me, but it's all good. You know, 2 young kids, I've been up for a couple of hours already, to be honest, so I'm absolutely fine. It's absolutely boiling where you are as well. I wish we had that sort of weather. Although yesterday, with the sun, I thought it were about 35 degrees, because, you know, sat on that north stand, I need to bring a cap because... I had my hand up just trying to block the light all the time. To be honest, there were one bloke sat just in front of me to the side. Ingenious. He had a woolly hat on, but then he had his ticket. He had a paper ticket like underneath his woolly hat, creating some sort of like visor almost. I thought that would just, you know, I'd never thought of doing it. I mean, it looked like a bit like a twat, to be fair. But, you know, if he could see the game and he weren't putting his hand up, then fair play to him.
Yeah, you have to start getting yourself a woolly hat with a peak on it. That's what that sounds like. But, yeah, certainly no woolly hats over here at the minute. It's been a nice 35 degrees here today, so shorts and T-shirts. And I've got my air conditioning and my fan blowing as I speak.
Yeah, I've got a hoodie on. Go figure. Anyway, enough of weather chat for this podcast. Do you know what as well? I'm absolutely knackered. I came out of Rillsby yesterday feeling like I'd ran around for 90 minutes. Honestly, those final, 10, 15 minutes were just draining.
Felt like a lifetime, didn't they?
Oh, tell me about it.
Go on then, last 10 minutes.
Oof. Do you know what? I mean...
I don't think I've got any nails left, that's for sure, because I was like, kick it, you know, like that bloke who sits behind you.
do you know what? Don't get me started on him, mate. Like, Christ almighty. Like, honestly, I nearly turned around and asked him if he'd renewed his season ticket, and then, you know, I was waiting to be disappointed when he told me that he has. Because, yeah, he was constantly going off on one, saying, do you know what makes me laugh, right? I don't mind people having a whinge and a moan. We all like to go to football for different reasons, and people like to go to have a get it off the chest. But when you're shouting to kick it long, I get that. That's fine. If you don't like playing out from the back and you think, you know, ball's going back to keeper, I get it. Some people don't like that. Not everyone's fully on board with the modern way of playing football. But then when we do go long and it don't come off, don't then start shouting, saying, what the fucking hell is that? You've literally just told him to do that. I mean, it's not like he's listening to you, to be fair, but, you know, you're shouting for it. So when he does it and it don't come off, don't then get annoyed. You can't, you know, you can't have it both ways. You know what I mean? I have to bite my lip. That will bite me down. Bite my lip, bite my tongue.
You need to say something. You need to tell him to come out with a different catchphrase or something, because get it for him is not the one to be saying all the time, is it?
So. No, not really. Not when we're scoring the goals that we're scoring. Anyway, let's talk about the football then. I always like to talk about before the game what your thoughts were. I mean, were you fairly confident that we could get something out of this game, you know, before we kicked off?
I was quite positive, really. I thought we'd get a result. I actually predicted 2-1. I think I put it in the Discord chat. But I said Ugbo and Bannon to score. So I'm quite pleased with that prediction. But yeah, we had to sort of hang on near end, and it were a bit of a long last 10 minutes, that's for sure. But I think overall they deserved it. But yeah, before the game, I were confident of getting 3 points, to be honest. And I was quite pleased the way they reacted when Bristol City equalised, because I think normally, or in certain games this year, we've just sort of gone, oh no, and then we've kind of collapsed, haven't we? So we're pleased with that. But yeah, before the game, I thought, 3 points, and I sort of said 2-1. So yeah,
there you go.
Shame I didn't put any money on it, to be honest.
I know, yeah. I mean, for me, I weren't going in it like thinking it were a dead cert that we were going to win the game. I think whenever you do that, you always come a little bit unstuck, don't you? But I thought that the fact that we'd beat Millwall in the way that we had, all right, there was the Leicester game, but then before that, you know, the game against Birmingham at home was another fairly convincing win. And I just thought that that kind of expectations returned a little bit. After Huddersfield, I know I've referenced it a few times, but after Huddersfield game, I had like zero expectations. I just thought, you know, going into the Birmingham game, I thought we were just going to get beat, and that were going to be it. The season were going to come to an abrupt end. But now I'm going in thinking, like, them nerves have come back, thinking, come on, I hope we win again. I hope we get a win today. I'm not going to say I would have took a point, because I feel like it is a game, you know, that this like block of three games or four games, including Millwall, I think were absolutely massive. But I feel like for like going into game at Bristol City, I had that expectation again that we could just do it and we could do something. But yeah, it's good to have them nerves back, I think, as well, because, you know, you don't want to be going into a game.
Yeah, I think that just recently as well, and obviously since Danny Rowe's come in, I think our home form is massive. Like the next, obviously, couple of games when we've got Plymouth and even I think Leeds is at home as well, isn't it? I think you know, even those games, you know, I'm confident in our home form. It's the away from home that obviously we need to try and pick up them extra points or maybe snag 3 points, but certainly home form. You know, the way that the players respond to the crowd and vice versa, and Danny Rowles, like, his interaction with crowd is phenomenal. I mean, you see him on sidelines and he's literally kicking every single ball with them players, isn't he?
Yeah.
He's just spurring them along. He's like us as a supporter, where, you know, you're saying, pass it here, move it there and do that. And he's waving his arms around, and he must be absolutely knackered at the end of the match.
yeah, it looks like. Yeah, I mean, I'll sit on the north stand. I can see him, you know, on the opposite side of the pitch, and yeah, he gets very animated, that's for certain. I mean, you touched on the home record. I know we're kind of skipping on a little bit, but 7 wins, 2 draws, and 3 defeats under Danny Rowe. It's 23 points out of 36. Obviously, yeah, stark contrast to the away form, but he's really, you know, I think when you're down at the bottom, if you can win your home games, you know, pick up the away points when you can, but you know, the home form is I think it's vital, and he's certainly sorted that side of things out. Just on the, you know, on the game as a whole, then before we touch on the starting lineup, like for me, these wins against, you know, especially at home, and the manner that we won the game, I think they're the ones that you need when you're at the bottom of the league. You know, I thought we were on top. I thought we were good value for the win. But how many times, Neil, have we said that we've been on top and the better team? And, you know, not just this season, I think, you know, in football in general. And then you come away with nothing, or you come away with a draw or worse, you know, like I said, a defeat. But it's good that we're on top and we actually made that count yesterday afternoon.
Yeah, that's right. And I think when Danny Rowe first came in, obviously our chance ratio went way up compared to when it were with Cisco, and we weren't converting them chances, were we? And I think the last four or five games, you know, with the exception of the Leicester game when we didn't score, in the other games, we've not actually created as many chances. But when we have, we've taken them. You know, Ugbo, like you're saying at start of the programme, Ugbo's on fire. Like he's had, you know, probably about seven or eight chances and he scored five goals. So I think the difference in the last four or five games is that we've started to become that clinical in the box and just finishing off our chances, as opposed to before, the ratio of goals to chances, and I don't know what the stats are, but ratios to goal to chances were like a lot less. You know, we were creating 12 chances and going, oh, we should have won these games. You know, maybe Watford at home when we drew, I think it was, when we had loads of chances and we come away with a draw and we're sort of downbeat about it. But now it's like, you know, I mean, obviously we'll come on to it, but Ugbo's first goal, one touch, turn, bang, goal, you know.
Yeah, that's fantastic. I mean,
we're starting to be clinical a bit, you know.
You mentioned being clinical. Ike Ugbo, he's had seven shots on target. He scored five goals. He's had 17 shots in total. I mean, let's not forget, I think he's hit the post twice as well. So, you know, that a couple of inches either side, and that could have quite easily been seven goals for the season. That's just, you know, he's averaging 3.5 shots a game. He's averaging 1.5 shots on target a game as well. And, you know, five goals in four games now. He's, you know, we will talk about him a little bit later on in a bit more detail. But yeah, to have someone that's as clinical as that, we've certainly been missing it. And yeah, it's quite refreshing to see, really, because this season I've been banging my head against brick wall, you know, in terms of, you know, we didn't bring a striker in the summer. It was clear and obvious that we needed one, but we didn't bring one in, and struggling for goals. I mean, Anthony Masaba were leading goal scorer for large parts of the season, and he's not exactly prolific either. So yeah, it was just quite refreshing to see. Like I said, I mean, three wins out of four now, six goals, we've conceded three, 9 points from 12. It's like promotion form, that, isn't it, Neil? And you know, I wouldn't have thought, you know, if you said to me, if I said to you, like, you know, two or three months ago that we'd be doing this, you probably laughed at me, to be honest.
Yeah, and you know what? On back of that disappointing result at Huddersfield, obviously, I think it's come out in press last week that they had this meeting and they all had a bit of a home cruise and stuff and cleared the air and stuff. And then since then, there's just been three wins in four. But, you know, if you think about that Huddersfield game, you know, really we should have been getting points from that and we didn't. It was so disappointing to come back with three wins out of four. And, you know, to be honest, Leicester, we gifted them two goals. They didn't create that many clear-cut opportunities and we still had our chances, clean sheet second half against them. So, yeah, plenty of positives, but I think that's kind of coincided a little bit with that little switch in formation that Danny Rowe's come up with, three at back, which you know, we might touch on as well when we go through to other things. But
yeah, just when you said about the Huddersfield game, I think you're right. He did come out. I think he spoke to someone in Germany as well. I don't know who it was who he spoke to. And you know, obviously I can't confirm this, but I think that up until that point, Danny Rowe was, everything he touched, and I don't want to say turned to gold, because we weren't winning every single game, but you know, he could do no wrong. Southampton putting Deshaun Bernard in the number six role was probably a mistake and everything, but I think that was the first game where he properly got it wrong, like in terms of the tactics and style of play and everything else and what he was doing. And I don't know if he just kind of if it not, I don't want to say knocked him down a peg or two, because I think that's probably the wrong words to use, but kind of made him realise a little bit that actually, you know, I can't just play gung-ho football and because I think that's what happened against Huddersfield. He just kept his foot in and thinking, let's get a goal back straight away, and it just all came crumbling apart. And I feel like it's maybe made him reevaluate how he needs to do things that, at the bottom of the league. And I feel like that, you know, especially the game against Millwall was more, we've not seen that kind of type of play, almost, you know, letting the other team have the ball and saying, go on then, what are you going to try and do with it, rather than going out and all out attack and surprise. And we were more calculated. And I feel like, you know, it is after that defeat that's kind of, you know, it's no surprise, is it, that they've had this home truths meeting with the players and the staff and everything, got everything off the chest. And he's kind of realised, right, we're in this together. We need to all, you know, let's stick to my principles. But, there's more than one way to skin a cat, as they say. So, go on.
I think he has stuck to his principles. He's just changed it slightly, you know, like with the three at the back, putting the wing backs in. Obviously, the loan players that have come in with Bido and Poveda, which I'm sure we'll talk about later, that they've now got like a month under the belts at the club, and they've bought into how he wants to play. But he has changed it because we obviously, everything went out front back. We made them mistakes against Leicester even. And then last couple of games, Beadle's gone a bit longer. Smith's come on at last 10-15 to hold up the ball. And then when he's gone to this three at the back, which I think's kind of worked, that's why when he changed it to last 10 minutes yesterday and put four at back, Johnson were getting absolutely battered down that left side. But I think with three at the back, Palmer at right centre-back and Valentin's, if you watch the sort of goals, he's almost been inverted and come inside.
Yeah.
And Palmer's still bombing on as a right back. So he's playing to his principles, but he's kind of just tweaked it a little bit. And whether, obviously, you've got Pedersen and Chris Powell there, and they're well experienced, especially Chris Powell in the Championship. And we've still got to remember that Danny Rowe's only 34, 35 years old and he's learning. So if he's just taken a little bit on board from Chris Powell or whatever in these last three or four games, you know, credit to his background, his back team staff as well as him, because you've got to, aren't you? And end of day, we've got 12 games left now to stay up. So, you know, we've got a 12 game season, really.
Yeah, just on that as well, 12 games. You know, if we do, I don't want to say when, because I don't want to be too confident, but if...
let's be positive.
If / when we stay up this season, I was talking to Steve coming home yesterday, and I'm like, I don't want to, we talk a lot about Chancery, and I feel like it's been great not talking about him for at least a couple of weeks anyway. The problem's not gone away. It's just, you know, we've put it to, it's not quite at the forefront of our attention right now. But I feel like if we stay up this season, he needs to back Danny Rowe in the summer, 110%. And I don't mean signing these 6-month loans or, you know, I mean actually signing some quality players that, you know, because you see what Danny Rill's doing with not, you know, they're not his players. I know we've brought in four players and they're all performing, since January, you know, Ugbo and Poveda, as you've mentioned. But some players of the ilk of Jan Poveda, you know, I don't mind, you know, they don't all have to be permanents. I get that. I get like what, you know, Championship clubs do have to sign loan players, but he needs to put his hand in his pocket and actually back the manager. And if he can't do that or won't do that, then I feel that's the point where he needs to hold his hands up and say, look, I've took Sheffield Wednesday as far as I can, or I can't take him any further at this point in time. I need someone else to come in and move him on. Or, you know, look, it's not going to be a 2-minute thing. You know, you're not going to be a takeover in a month's time or anything like that. It might be a little bit longer, but certainly you've seen it where there's outside investment. You know, the buyers will just inject X amount of money into the club until they've bought it. I know we need to learn from his mistakes and not do what we did, back in 2015, and ultimately that's why we're in the mess that we're in. I think really by signing these older players with long contracts that they can't get out of or don't want to get out of, and you know, and everything else. But he needs to do that. My only worry is I feel like Danny Rill's turning water into wine at the moment with the players that he's got. Because I think we are probably overperforming the squad that we've got. There is some League One players in there.
Saying that though, he's got, you know, I mean, I suppose you've got to give a bit of credit to Cisco for bringing your Masabas and your Gassamas in some regards, because they've got 2 or 3 year contracts, and I think they're the kind of players that Danny Rowe would probably look at bringing in anyway, because they're young, he can develop them, they can play his style, that, you know, the fast, exciting, all these, you know, the Pervader gets you off your seat, you know. I think that's a Danny Rowe kind of player. So, yeah, he is kind of turning, you know, water into wine, as you say, in terms of the sort of the squad that he's inherited. So yeah, there will be a big overhaul in the summer. Obviously, if we stay up, I agree with what you're saying, it needs to back him. If we go down, I hope there'll be a different kind of regeneration of a squad. But, you know, end of day, if Chan Siri, which we're all, you know, hoping, if he puts his hands up, which is a big ask, and says, look, I can't do it anymore, and I'll sell the club to whoever. You know, we all hope that happens, I think, realistically. But whether it does or not, I don't know. But if he does stay on, like you say, yeah, he's got to back him. Otherwise, you know, Danny Rowe's going to be snapped up and he'll be off somewhere else.
That's the thing. And I'm just looking and look at what he's doing with the squad that he's got now. What can he do with a better squad, like with better players? I think Pervada, in terms of technical ability, is by far the best player that we've got on the pitch. You know, just the things that he does is absolutely incredible. And I just think if you had a team of Pervadas or ability wise, that level, Christ Almighty, like, you know, they're the players that can do what he's asking. I'm not saying that the players that we've got can't do it, but it's taken a while to get up to that sort of level. If we're bringing players in that are at that level already, then, you know, we could be a formidable force. But my only worry is that because he's working miracles with what he's got, I feel like Chan Siri's going to go, oh, fantastic, I can buy these cheap shit players, and he's going to turn them into something half decent. He's not got to think that. You've got to speculate to accumulate. I don't want him to go down that route of just bringing in has-beens and everything and thinking, well, you know, do what you can with that kind of thing.
Yeah, and I mean, when was the last time we spent 2 or 3 million on a player, let alone 2 or 3 million on 3 or 4 players? It's not happened, has it? And that obviously works both ways with the club not selling players for money when they've had an opportunity to do so as well. And, you know, if we stay up, is there any truth in going back for this, that American striker? I can't remember his name now, but
Duncan Maguire, yeah.
Yeah, is there any truth in what was circulating about him? Because obviously the Blackburn deal fell down. Is if Danny Rowe's identified him as the target and this 30,000 a week striker, and we were close, or we weren't close, we'll never know. But if we do stay up, is he the kind of player that we're going to go back in for and splash out big on? You know, you'd like to think so, but
don't get me wrong though. I don't want us to go out there and get in the same mess that we were in before. I'm not asking for us to
us
to go stupid and, you know, 5 and 10 million pound players and everything else. I just feel like, you know, I get the impression the players that we brought in January weren't the top targets. I know Pervada's been fantastic. I know Ogbo's been fantastic as well. You know, you could argue maybe they were the top targets. But I feel like there was probably other targets that we missed out on and didn't get for whatever reason. And I just want him to have the best possible opportunity. I say him as in Danny Rowe, of doing something brilliant at Sheffield Wednesday. And we've got that manager now. We've got that manager that can do something, and it's exciting. And pretty much, I would go as far as saying 100% of the fans are fully behind him. You know, not a bad word is said about them. And how many times have you been in that situation? You know, we're 23rd in the league. You know what I mean? We're next to bottom. Yeah. We're in the relegation zone, and yet he's got the buy-in from every single fan. And we've just got to we've just got to use it and push forward, because if not, it's just be a massive opportunity lost. And you know, there's other managers out there that's, you know, I'm sure there's other managers that have an equal standard as Danny Rearl. He's not just one of a kind, but it's going to be damn, you know, it's going to be so difficult to get someone to come in that, you know, in it that's similar to him. Let's talk about starting lineup then. Unchanged from the side that beat Millwall 2-0 last time out. No fresh injury concerns. I know Dominic Iorfa were fit, but you know, it was unlikely that he was going to get straight into the side. So it were Beadle in goal, Palmer, Hecker and Bernard, Valentin, Volks, Bannon and Johnson, Pervada, Masaba and then Ugbo up top. What were your thoughts when you saw that lineup? I mean, I called it in the morning on Twitter. I thought we could see an unchanged lineup for what I think is the first time under Danny Rearl, and probably the first time this season as well. He had no reason to change it, did he really, Neil?
No, not at all. I were happy enough with that, because obviously the performance last week against Millwall were good enough. It did the job, and obviously he might not have had many options to change anyway. I know Cadamatri came back in off bench. Good to see Dom Iorfa back in the squad. But yeah, I certainly didn't have any qualms about it, and no qualms about keeping to the same system neither, because it worked against Millwall, and we needed that doggedness again to dig in yesterday, because yesterday could have been, you know, a lot different to how the result turned out. Bristol, they're no mugs, really, to be honest.
Yeah. What's your stance on keeping an unchanged lineup? Are you that traditional person that's like, you know, never change a winning side, or do you not mind when, you know, when there's two and three changes every week and kind of rotating the squad and everything else?
Yeah, I mean, obviously we're not there all week with them, are we? We're through training, and if everyone's fit and firing and you're trusting them players to do the job again, if they can implement what you need for that opposition, because it might be it's a different tactical approach from playing Bristol than it is to Millwall. But if it were the same, then fair play. But yeah, it obviously brings that continuity as well. You know, you see Bannon and Johnson linking down that left. There's Pervada and Valentin down the right a little bit now, sort of linking in. So yeah, I don't mind not changing it. I were a little bit surprised not to see Momo Diaby on the bench, and Shipston just came in from nowhere and sat on bench. But you know,
yeah.
And, you know, that begs the question with me regards to like letting George Byers go when you've not got any midfielders available. It's just it didn't make sense. But yeah, I didn't have any qualms about the lineup. It were fair play to it. Same team.
Yeah, just on that though, I suppose George Byers going might have just allowed us to bring Jan Pervader in terms of the wages and stuff. So you have to, you know, these other things that you have to look at. But I do get what you're saying. For me, I don't mind chopping and changing. I think that the football is a squad game, and you're gonna have to rely on these players that are your fringe players to come in at some point, you know, with injuries and the like. You know, Windass is out injured at the moment. You know, Iorfa, I know he's come back, but he's been out for a while, so there has been injuries to the team. So you've got to call upon these players. So you don't want to be calling up someone in 20 games into the season that's not kicked a ball. Do you know what I mean?
That's right. And he said that, Ante, over the last 4 or 6 weeks. We need all the players. We need all the players to be ready. So, yeah, that's, you know, fair play. But and everybody has been, really. Everyone that's come in has done a job. So,
yeah, fair enough.
Can't grumble.
Let's move on to, you know, the first half then. I thought we started pretty brightly. I know we scored fairly early on, you know, 16 minutes on the clock, but I thought, you know, up until that point, you know, it was a bit of back and forward. You know, the Bristol City came and, you know, they weren't just going to sit back. I don't think any team's really going to come to Hillsborough against next to bottom in the league and just put 11 men behind the ball. But, you know, they gave it a good go, and it were, I thought we looked a little bit more attacking than perhaps we did against Millwall, which I wanted to see that, really. I wanted us to get a bit more on the front foot, especially at home. And yeah, like I said, it took 16 minutes for the first goal. If you watch it back, Hecker comes out of defence. I mean, Valentin, he passes it to Valentin. He's actually the furthest man forward when before he comes back to receive the ball. Sends Palmer on his way, first time cross, Ugbo's there, he's lurking, that movement again, you know, to get in between both defenders. I mean, the ball comes behind him, but I think that's, you know, that's the only place where it can be. He takes his, you know, takes the first touch, steadies himself, left foot. That's his weaker foot, by the way. You wouldn't think it, yeah, the way that he finishes it. And the keeper's got absolutely no chance. I mean, I want to say smashed it, but I think he more kind of caressed it almost, like, yeah, you know, round goalkeeper.
Yeah.
12 yards out, keeper, no chance. It was a fantastic goal, weren't it, Neil?
It was, and I think, and like I sort of touched on a little bit earlier, where he's adapted that playing style, Danny Rowley, definitely off the training ground, because realistically, Palmer was in the right-back position and Valentin was in that this inverted position, like basically off the striker. Mm. And he's fed Palmer out wide, who's then in the sort of wing-back position, if you like. He's whipped it in, first touch behind him, but he just like turned and, like I say, it were almost like a natural instinct of a striker, dare I say it, James, that striker that we never signed. But, I'm sure it's yourself that says, oh, I can't see Ugbo getting them 8 or 10 goals this season.
Yeah.
And lo and behold, he is, because, but yeah, great ball in by Palmer, great move. Obviously, Valentini on that, it tucked inside, and it's like one touch, turn swivel, bang, goal. And it's like, yeah. Brilliant, you know.
It was just. It's a long time since we've kind of seen that kind of clinicalness, you know. That, and it's almost like he didn't even need to look where the goal were. He picked the ball up, you know. Like I said, 12 yards out, he's got into that space. I mean, one, it's a great pass from Palmer to find him. You know, one thing he's getting in the box, the other one, you know, the ball's got to come to you. And yeah, I suppose he has to do what he's done, you know. He has to hit it in the way that he has done, because if not, a defender's going to come on him, and, you know, if he's going to try and turn, he's going to get tackled. So to have that instinct to, you know, to turn on the swivel and hit it, and it almost took me by surprise, really, the way that we scored. And
well, I think normally we're kind of so used to them having an extra couple of passes in box and laying it out and doing other stuff. It just literally went in box, one touch, turn, shot, and goal. And like, oh, okay, that's how it's done. Do you know what I mean? It was like,
yeah,
it's simple but effective. But again, going back to that, it's like, he's just been clinical. That's it. Mm. He's a striker. He wants to score. He's on form. Why not? Just hit it.
He didn't
hit it with his laces. He just caressed it in the corner and put it away from keeper.
Yeah. The lead didn't last. Well, it didn't even last 10 minutes. 25 minutes in, Knight scored for them with a header from a corner from Gardner Hickman. And by the way, like, Gardner Hickman's given me, who was it now? I'm going to say Good Johnson. It's not Good Johnson. There was a player, I think it was an Icelandic player, who had a huge surname on the back of his shirt. Oh, what about him? Venegård of Hesselink. He had a long name, didn't he, on his back? And his name is that long that the number had to be right down on the bottom of his shirt. It just didn't look right. If that were me, I'd have just had to shorten my surname or something, or just gone with Gardner or Hickman or something. I know that's not his name, but I'd have had to do something, because it looks a bit silly on his shirt. But anyway, he put a fantastic cross in for the corner. I've watched it back a few times. It's actually Ike Ugbo's man who scores the header. I don't know if you've seen that. It's, do you know what?
Yeah.
I know we're saying it's a free header and everything. The defender's got to be better. I think it's well worked from Bristol. They use the whole basketball technique of you know, the blocking and the guards and what have you. He runs past the defender. One of the Bristol City players moves back. Ugbo can't get past him, and that just gives him them, you know, that couple of yards that he needs.
It's a good header, but at first off, I'm thinking, how's Beadle not got it? Because he kind of like looped over him.
6 foot six. Thinking, smallest 6 foot six goalkeeper I've ever seen in my life.
And then I'm thinking, why is there not a man on the post, you know, to edit out? And so there were a few things, and I thought, oh, you know. But I think one thing that we have not been good at over the last couple of years is, one, defending corners, and two, actually scoring from them.
Yeah.
So I don't know what goes on at training ground, but that came to, it's like, oh, we conceded. How many teams come and score corners against us, you know, straight in, headed goal? But we don't seem to do that ourselves. I don't know. I mean, I know Bannon's got to get it past the front post to start with. But...
yeah, that's a task in itself, isn't it, to be honest?
But yeah, so I kind of, oh, free header, yeah, fair enough. And then, you know, like I've said before, the response from them getting that goal was good. Like, they could have easily gone, oh, you know, shit, here we go again. Like, yeah. But yeah, they dug in well. But yeah,
just on that, Neil. Like, while you're on corners, I'm just looking now. So we've given up 96 shots from a set piece. That does include free kicks, by the way, which is the sixth lowest. Just in comparison, Watford, 149 shots that they concede from set pieces. In terms of goals, we've conceded 10, which is the sixth worst. I think Blackburn, 14, 13, 12, and then obviously, yeah, we're on 10. The best is Hull have only conceded 5 from set pieces. And yeah, it's when you look at it on the opposite side, we've only scored 5, which is, yeah, the fourth worst from set piece. Yeah. Again, that does include free kicks. I don't know, is Gregory's goal on the opening day of the season, is that classed as a set piece goal? It probably is, you know, the way that it gets nodded down. But I know what you mean. Yeah. In the a crossing and a header from a corner.
Yeah.
I think the last one's got to be McGuinness last season against whoever it was at home. Yeah. I can't remember in the pissing rain.
And that's the thing, is like we seem to concede them, but I mean I don't even think any of our centre backs have scored this year, to be honest, and I can't really remember them getting much last year in that respect. But when we don't have that, and other teams do have that, where, you know, your centre backs might get 2 or 3 goals each, that's, you know, 6 or 7 goals for a season, and we don't get that, it's just putting so much extra pressure on everybody else. Well, yeah. Mainly the strikers to score the goals. And
yeah,
I don't know what we can do to change that, but, you know, never mind. We'll probably say that Icky will probably get an hat trick next week. You never know.
Like, I hope he does against his former club, against Rotherham. Yeah, that would be nice, wouldn't it? Icky and Michael Smith combining to get a few goals. You're right. Yeah. We ain't got a centre back that's scored. The only defenders that have scored is Marvin Johnson. If you want to class him as a defender, I know he's been playing a lot at left back, hasn't he, recently this season. But now, Juan Delgado, he got a goal in against Hull earlier
was
on.
He?
But, yeah, I know exactly. But yeah, in terms of centre backs, you're right. We haven't. Deshaun Bernard's not scored one. Bambo, Ihequa, you know, none of them have got on the score sheet.
Same with long throw-ins as well, though, James. Same with long throw-ins. Like we keep last few games, Volks has been putting these long throw-ins in. And they just get headed out, and then they clear it, and you're like, what's the point in putting 3 centre backs up? You know, we're not really capitalising on the long throwing, so
yeah,
you know, I wouldn't really persist in that as well. I'd just rather get him take a quick throw in, get it into Pervada's feet, and he can just take it on rather than wasting time, because we're not being successful from it. So
yeah, before that goal as well, I thought, you know, we had a chance where Valentin bombed down the right hand side, and he got caught in between two minds, I think, and, you know, I've seen it from the opposite angle from where I was sat, and I think Bristol City just do well in kind of covering off all options, and he tries to float it in, and, you know, it gets headed away. But at that point, I felt like he should have smashed it across the box, and anything can happen. Yeah. You know, you get a corner, you get a deflection and everything else, and obviously, you know, hindsight's a wonderful thing. And then, you know, lo and behold, a couple of minutes later, they go down the other end, and it did felt like a bit of a sucker punch, really. I thought the response from the fans were great, though. You know, I don't know if it came across for you, but we score a goal and it's like, ah, shit. But then there was a roar and a cheer and like, come on, you know, there were no getting on the fans, on the players' back or anything like that. It was like, you know, we all come together and come on, we can do it. And yeah, we had to wait until just before half time. I mean, yeah, at the time, I thought that he just hit Ugbo. I thought he didn't know much about it, but I need to. I've done him a bit of disservice, really, because he actually gets his head on it, doesn't he? And he nods it in, and Pervada Pervada stands it up at the back post. It heads clear only as far as Johnson, and just as I've been saying, just smash it in. It's a shot come cross, and yeah, he gets his head on it, and keeper's had no chance, really. It happens that quick. Keeper's just stood still, isn't he? And
He just kind of directed it, didn't he? And used the the sort of speed of the pass, the speed of the shot from Johnson, that just, he just fired it back into the box and he just used the pace at ball and directed it in. But again, just like we, like he did with first goal, just that instinct, he's just knows where goal was. He knew he didn't have to do anything with it because the pace were already on the ball and he's just directed it in and stuck it in bottom corner. So yeah, fair play to him. And he's in right place at right time. And Johnson, you know, did right thing and just, you know, pumped it back in there. But I think just before that, for the second goal, obviously Pervada stood that up for the second goal. But a few minutes before it, it all started from when Pervada did this little maneuver on halfway line and just basically broke someone's ankles, took it past them and started. And then he started an attack and I think we got a corner from it. And then we got like two or three corners in succession where Johnson's pinged one over at Bannon and then he's pumped it into the box and there were a bit of that pressure. And then we've got the goal. So it kind of like sparked from that little bit of magic from Pervada where it's like we all do, you know, all of the years, we all like getting off our seat when someone's, you know, like that. And then, you know, Pervada's he's been part of that second goal. But also just before he dinks it in, again, Valentin and Palmer are in them positions where Palmer's out wide, Valentin's inside, and then he plays it to Pervada. So, yeah, you know, another well-worked goal. Ugbo's instinctive sort of nod of the head, if you like.
Yeah.
All round it were, good goal and a good response and a good time to get the goal as well.
You mentioned Pervada there. How impressed have you been since he's come in? Because for me, he's like a little magician. The way that he can control the ball, you know, the ball's come from Moon and the ball just sticks to him. And not only that, there were a moment, the ball had gone up and it were, you know, difficult one to control, and you watch him and he's got into position, bear in mind like the sun's difficult to, you know, pick the ball out, and he's looked up and you watch him and he's looked up, then he's looked where the players are as well, and then obviously looking for, you know, at someone coming to tackle him, seeing that nobody's around him, so he's controlled it, turned, and then straight away, we aren't even thinking, the ball's gone straight out to the left hand side, I think it was Johnson, and he started some, you know, started an attack, and you look at that and you think, you know, I mean, I know these are professional footballers at the end of the day, but there's been times this season where you've questioned whether they are professional footballers or not. But just to see how comfortable and composed he is on the ball, and he just wants the ball. He don't care if he's got a player around him. He just wants the ball all the time, and he wants to show what he can do. And I think we're quite lucky to sign him, really. And he looks like he's enjoying himself. Again, I know I'm skipping a bit to the end, but you know the passion that you see, and you know he did it after the Millwall game, fist pumping the fans. Yeah. He loves going over to the Kop and, you know, and celebrating with the fans and everything when we've won. And we said, don't we, Neil? Never fall in love with a lone player. I think there's two that we've fallen in love with already.
Yeah, I mean, look, obviously, I mean, his first touch is generally very good, and he's always positive. He wants to beat that man. He wants to do a bit of a skill. He keeps possession, though. That's the thing. If there's nothing on where he can't beat the player or whatever, he still keeps the possession and keeps it ticking over. And I think since he's come in, because I actually thought Bannon were a bit poor yesterday. I thought his passing were off and everything. But I think we're that reliant on Barry Bannon over you know, this year, last season, whenever, is that since Pervada's come in, we've got another outlet and he can create something. He can split a defence. He can take a player on. I know Bannon don't really take players on, but, you know, look at Bannon's pass last week for Masaba against Millwall. Brilliant. Yeah. But we've got another outlet now. So because he wants that ball, opposition now are going, well, we all know about Barry Bannon, but now we've got to watch this Pervada kid.
Yeah.
And yeah, you're right. He's exciting. He gets the ball. He's positive. You know, he's making things happen. I mean, by 75th minute, he looks absolutely knackered, mind, but he's got to get up to match fitness. But you know, you can't knock him. And like you said, that even that, you know, after game when there's a goal scored as well, he's fully bought into it. So whether that's, you know, down to Danny Roll again, he's fully bought into it. I know he's only temporary, but.
Yeah, well, they spoke to Danny Rill after the game. I think this on Radio Sheffield, and he mentioned about Jan Pervada, and he said how they've got he wanted to say that they've got that bond and everything, and he kind of backtracked a little bit and said that he's got that bond with all the players. Obviously, this is Danny Rowe.
Right.
But I know he's trying to say he has got a relationship with Jan Pavada and one that's working. And he was saying how when he's on that side, he's always looking to him to, you know, for that kind of positive affirmation, I guess, of like what he's doing is right, and he's you know, almost like, I suppose it's a bit like a father and a son relationship in it, really, in terms of, you know, am I doing the right thing, Dad, and everything, and yeah. and the you know, he clearly is, like, he's clearly doing exactly what Danny Rill's saying. And that's what I mentioned about, you know, about Danny Rill being backed and bringing the players in that can actually implement what he's trying to do. Because we've got to, let's not forget that Danny Rill's come from a background of, you know, German national side and Bayern Munich, playing, you know, working with players that are, you know, 50, 60, 70 million pound players. We've not got those 60, 70 million pound players, far from it. So I feel like, you know, they're not going to perhaps do exactly what he's asking of them immediately, or sometimes they're perhaps not even capable of it. Whereas when you get a player like Pavada, he can just do it straight away. Like he's fully on board and everything. Neil, half time came, well, moments after we scored that second goal. I mean, they always say a goal before half time is, you know, the best time to score, but I think the best time to score is probably just before full time or maybe just after half time, but everyone says it, don't they? Best time to score just before half time, yeah. Best time to get a goal.
Yeah. I mean, if you're 3-0 up, it doesn't really matter, but I suppose any time's a good time to score.
It is when you're Wednesday anyway.
Yeah. It has been, yeah. Look, obviously just before the break, it sort of changes probably the mood in the dressing room as well. Like, you know, we've just got our noses in front, but I suppose then it's about refocusing them and getting them to concentrate.
Picture the scene. All of your mates around, you've got your McNugget share boxes ready to go. Partner this with your team playing champagne football. Perfect. Order McDelivery now on the McDonald's app. There's nothing quite like a McDelivery. At participating restaurants, 18 plus, serving times, delivery fee and terms apply. See mcdonalds.com.
The TalkSport Fan Network is proudly teaming up with Three for Mental Health Awareness Week this year. Beyond the pitch, beyond the results, we're here to connect fans, getting them to embrace the highs and lows of supporting your club. Because we're not just fans, we're a team. With 2 in 3 football fans having struggled with their mental health, we understand that life off the pitch can present its own challenges. That's why we're committed to ensuring you have the tools to stay connected with your friends and fellow supporters. Take a moment to connect with your mates. A simple text or an open conversation can make a world of difference. And if they don't respond right away, don't hesitate to follow up. Let's all take a moment to talk more than football.
First 10 minutes, because I think Bristol came out first 10 minutes and had more of the ball and looked, you know, brighter.
Yeah.
Obviously, just before half time, you've got a whole second half to go, so you can't get too carried away with it. But I suppose, you know, if you score in the, I don't know, say 123rd minute, for argument's sake, at Wembley, there's very little chance for somebody to come back. But
that is the perfect time to score in it in 123rd minute or 97 at Hillsborough. Yeah, there's loads of them, isn't there? What did you think to the second half? Because for me, I felt like we came out and Danny Rill's mentioned game management, and I think that's exactly how that second half went. I don't think we didn't commit too many men forward. We didn't go gung-ho. I think it was all about just keeping onto the ball. And I know that's sometimes a dangerous thing to do, you know, because, you know, there's only a goal in it and they get a corner. You know, you don't need much momentum or anything to score from a corner. And, you know, everyone says they only take seconds to score a goal, and it could easily have been 2-2 and you're kind of back to square one again. But I felt like it was one of those where take no risks, just kind of wait for that opportunity to arise, try and catch them on the break if we can, you know, using the pace of Pavada, Masaba, Valentin, and everything. And it was, not a great deal happened in that second half, did it really?
No, but like you say, I think we were solid. They didn't really create many chances. I think the only way that they were going to score, which, again, scares the life out of me every time, is set plays, you know, corners, free kicks, because we can't bloody defend them, basically. But yeah, we did catch Mont Break a few times, and you know, we probably should have got another one. I think Paul Valentin was unlucky again, furthest player forward on one. I think he might have been Bannon that played him through, and then he kind of got caught under his feet a bit, and then he's gone past defender and had that shot, and it only just went wide. But you know, that was another chance. And then you've got Ugbo when we did that air kick when Masaba's base to Pervada. So we had a couple of really good chances on break just to finish it off. And I think 3-1 would have been a little bit less nervous in that last 10 or 15 minutes because,
just on that chance that you said about the Ugbo adding, you know, fresh air it. There was almost like, just hit it, one of you. Like when it came across to Pervada, I thought he was just going to smash it straight in, to be honest. And then when he squared it to Ugbo, I'm like, that's got to be it. Like, you know, I was waiting for the net to bulge.
Yeah, he just missed it.
Oh, I know we've been bigging him up, haven't we? But yeah, I'm just waiting for that ball to nestle in that bottom corner. One thing that did happen in the second half was obviously a red card for Deshaun Bernard, second bookable offence. Before we talk about that one, should he have perhaps gone in the first half? Because he brought their man down, and I don't know what you felt about it, but...
Yeah.
What did you think?
Yeah. To be honest, I thought he should have gone in first half. I think he were lucky. It were a clumsy one. And he were kind of like through on goal, really. So very, very fortunate to be... yellow carded for that in first half.
Joe, I've not watched it back. Obviously, I were there. I think Heck was covering, isn't he? But he's quite far away. Heck, isn't he? Like, I don't know if he's in.
He's not. I mean, if he gets past Bernard on that bit of play, he's in, because I think Heck was like probably 10, maybe 8-10 metres away the other way, and he wouldn't have got across, so he would have been through. So very fortunate in my eyes. In saying that, just obviously before the second yellow, which you can't really argue about, I thought Dickie were a bit lucky on that tackle on Ugbo when he got a yellow card for them in first half, because it were late, it were high, and he knew what he was doing. I mean, he went through on goal, but just the height and the lateness of the tackle alone, I thought that could have been a red. So maybe he's kind of balanced that up after he's given Deshaun the first yellow. But then the second half, I don't think he's meant it maliciously. I think he's just mistimed it and completely.
He looks awful tackled, doesn't it, really? Like, their play just gets a toe end on it before. And, you know, it's one of those hard tackles. If he wins the ball, everyone's like, yeah. But, I mean, come on, Deshaun. You're on a yellow card. You can't be diving in like that at all. I mean, he's probably thinking, well, he's going to think he's going to get the ball, but you've got to be careful because, I mean, look, it's not cost us in the end, has it, in terms of this game, you know, against Bristol City, because we've won in the end. But by God, those last 10 or 15 minutes were backs to the wall stuff. And, you know, just on that, it was a proper Chris Kamara type, you know, scenario, weren't it?
Well, I were watching it, and because I think they were going to bring Bambo on at that time. And I see Bernard going off, and I think even commentator said, Bernard's off, Bambo's on. Obviously, he's on a yellow, so he's protecting him. And then he goes down tunnel, and he goes straight down tunnel. And I think John Pearson says, has he sent him off? He's sent him off, yeah. Proper Chris Kamara.
There's a sending off for Hillsborough. Is there Jeff? I thought he just got subbed off, Jeff.
It was definitely like that.
I'd clocked it straight away. I'd seen it and I thought,
He must have been. It must have been 10 minutes earlier, wasn't it?
Honestly,
I'm surprised he remembered.
I know. Do you know what? I said exactly the same to Steve. We were like, "Oh, he's gone there. He's gone." And obviously, they played advantage, and then I think they've had a chance. It doesn't go out of play. We get the ball. We even have another chance as well at this point. Again, ball doesn't go out of play. And it eventually does go out for a throw-in. And it probably is about 5 minutes after it actually happened. And I'm thinking, is he going to pull it back? Is he going to pull it back? And he doesn't. Bernard actually blocks one. Like, he's not on the line, but he gets in the way of a shot. And I'm thinking, I know this is like, don't play out, because, you know, that shot wouldn't have happened if he'd have brought the player back. But I mean, like Steve was saying, imagine if he'd have scored a goal Imagine if he'd have ran forward and yeah. you know, and got an Ender one, and then he scores and then gets a booking and then gets sent off. You know, they'd be up in arms going, fucking hell, yeah. he shouldn't even be on pitch. But yeah, yeah like he had no qualms. And I mean, just on the ref for a second as well, I put a tweet out last night. I thought he was the best referee that we've had all season. I know we've just mentioned that maybe Bernard should have got a red card, but I don't think it was Stonewall. I don't think it was, you know, it wasn't like, you know, he's made a mistake. I think it's, you know, you could argue, yeah, he should have got a red card earlier on. A few people have said, you know, he missed the time wasting and stuff, but I don't, you know, when the game's nil-nil.
I think he's tried to let...
Yeah.
He's tried to let it go as much as he can, hasn't he? And, you know, you can say he should have had a red in first half. And I'm saying Dickie should have had a red, but he's not giving him a red. And then fair play to him, he's let play on, which we all want referees to do when there's a you know, advantage in play. And then he's, like you say, sent Bernard off five minutes after he's fouled somebody. So,
but for me, I think
it's
it
not
was
like
the,
he's given him a penalty.
It was the letting the game flow. No, them stupid, needless, like chucking yourself on the floor when someone's just breathed on you. He didn't fall
kind
for
of
that.
Said, get up and get on with it, hasn't
he? Yeah, but he did it for both sides as well. I think there were a couple of times where Pervada went down and he said, "No, get up." That's it. Frustrates the hell out of me when players do that, especially defenders when they're running, you know, towards the goal line and they feel that touch and they go down and you think that you've bought that free kick and it's an easy free kick for a referee to give because nothing, you know, the defender's in possession of the ball, nothing's going to happen. The striker, you know, the attacker didn't have it. They weren't going to score a goal. So that's why they give it every single time, but it just frustrates the hell out of me. And I don't think he did that yesterday. I thought that he reffed it pretty well. I think by all accounts he reffed the 4-0 against Cardiff in the FA Cup as well, which were quite eventful, weren't it?
Can we have him every week?
Yeah.
Can we have him every week then?
I mean, that were eventful, weren't it, with all the penalties that Cardiff got given.
Yeah.
Credit where credit's due. I think we're quick to dish it out when refs have been poor. I think you've got to you've got to say, you know, and give credit where it's due when a referee's had a good performance. And I think, you know, if the refs, you know, he's not without his flaws. I'm sure there's, you know, every referee makes a mistake. But I think if we had a referee like that every single time, and look, we've won the game. It's easy to praise a referee when ultimately, you know, every decision that he's made has had no bearing on the result because you've got 3 points at the end of it. And I do appreciate that, but I felt like, I thought he made it a better spectacle by just letting the game flow, in my opinion.
But you just said it there though, James, if the referee's made decisions that haven't influenced the game, he's done his job, he's let things go, he's give it a foul when it's a foul. You know, he's not made any really over contentious decisions. You know, it's not like, you know, was it Oxford last year when they got a penalty when somebody fell over at back of Firmino?
Yeah.
You know, it's not like he's given big blunders like that where we can all point the finger, because like you say, we're sat here and going, do you know what, he had a good game for both teams, because he didn't really make any massive dubious decisions or poor decisions effectively.
I don't there weren't any, you know, referees a wanker chance or anything like that. And I know
that's always a good side.
And I know obviously we were leading for, you know, there was only probably 20-30 minutes out of the 90 that we weren't leading for, and obviously we're leading for the whole of the second half. So again, I know it does kind of change your perception of a referee. It might be a little bit different if we were perhaps losing, but even though, you know, he's given a red card and we're still not, you know, we're not up in arms about it. It were fair, you know, everyone knew that we were going to get a second yellow for that. Do you know what, for me, I feel like some referees want a bit center of attention. They want to be the focal point and they want to make it all about them, whether that's what they actually think or whether that's just how it comes across. But he wasn't one of them. You know, he was one that just, you know, just ref the game as it should. Thomas Kirk was his name, by the way, for that. You know, I know some people like to take notice of referees. I don't really, you know, people are like, oh, fucking hell, he's refereeing again. He gave us two red cards in them in last two. I don't even look who they are, mate.
That'll be that bloke who sits behind you. Have probably got them all written down.
Yeah, probably. You've got them, got a black mark next to some people's names. Yeah, just before we do the three-word match review and everything, you know, just great scenes at the end. Still people leaving before the end. I don't get that. 2-1 up, you know, not seen many wins this season. You've got to stay right to the end. I know people have the reasons and everything else, but I've not seen as many people. The people that did stay till the full-time whistle, there were a good 10 minutes after when Danny Rills come over, and they're still there. I've never seen that many people stay after the game and joining in with the celebrations. I mean, Jan Pavada, I know we've already spoke about him, but he absolutely loves it. Him and Masaba are absolutely buzzing. There was a point where Will Volks is like pointing and talking to whoever he's stood at the side of. He's obviously saying, oh, look at him, like, you know, like and laughing and joking, you know, like he's a little kid, you know, just getting all excited. But like Danny Rill and Chris Powell, they are fully invested in it, aren't they now? Absolutely, like in terms of the fans and that connection.
Yeah, and I think there's a bit of a snippet when Danny Rill comes over to South Stand, I think it is, and Chris Powell's doing this jump up in air and give each other a hug before they go down the tunnel, like you say. But rightly so, and I think that's what he's created. And he's created this massive bond between him and the fans, and he's chanting his name every game. But I think it puts on to players as well, because if you actually watch after, I think it's the second goal, you've got Paul Valentin falling to his knees, banging on ground, you know, yes, get in there, and Palmer's in box with his arms in air. And I think Iheck was on halfway line when it shows another camera angle. And even he's like punching ground. So it's like, you know, falling to your knees and punching ground. You've just gone 2-1 up against Bristol. It's not like you won World Cup, but, you know, you can see that there's this massive, everyone's into it, you know, everyone's bought into it. And like you say, Pervada's only been there a few weeks and he's, you know, bigging it up to a crowd. And
it's that underdog mentality, isn't it, that you know, because Bannon referenced it after the Birmingham game, that everyone's written us off, like last season after the Peterborough game, everyone had written us off there. And I think that the players that are still there, that were there last season, will probably be telling the players that have come in, like, we've done it before. Like, it's not impossible. You know, we're 10 points adrift, but it don't matter. Like, there's still plenty of time left. We can do it. And I think Danny Rill's very much like that. He'll be referencing the times that, you know, he'll be looking now and going, well, he won't even need to tell him, you know, three points adrift of safety. I'm sure there's plenty of teams that have survived having been only 3 points 3 points away and everything. So, you know, you don't need to tell them at all. But even when it was eight after Huddersfield, he'll have looked back on the stats and gone, these teams have done it. It's not impossible. Like you can still do it. They still, you know, we can still finish in this position realistically if you do what we need to do, looking at the form and everything. And yeah, it's just so weird that I keep looking. I feel like we're going for the playoffs. You know, if you just took away the league table, I'd be like, the mood around everything now after these couple of wins, it's amazing what it does for you, because you wouldn't have thought we were where we were.
Exactly. End of day, we're still in bottom two. We've not actually jumped up the league the whole time we've been there, but, you know, performances have improved. We've won, we've scored, we've, you know, celebrating every goal, every game, as if we are touching on playoffs or whatever. But we haven't even moved in league. We're still second bottom. So it's like,
we've not even scored a goal a game. We're still on 20. We're on 28 goals out of 34 games. And I know, obviously, a lot of that's been tarnished by Cisco at the start of the season and those 10 games that he was in charge of, which were an absolute car crash. But yeah, it's absolutely mad.
But even in that, we've still had a couple of 4-0 losses and all that stuff. So, you know, considering all that's in there as well, there's definitely positivity, and that gap's getting closer and closer.
Yeah, just in terms of that gap as well, I was looking at the league table and some of the results. Yeah, not they didn't all go our way, far from it. I mean, Stoke lost 2-1 away to Cardiff. They're just 3 points ahead of us in 22nd. QPR beat Rotherham to climb out of the bottom three for the first time since September, I think it is. They're only three points ahead of us, so they're out of the relegation zone on goal difference. Millwall beat Southampton, like 2-0 loss to Wednesday, changed the manager, beat Southampton 2-1. They're 4 points, or they stay 4 points ahead of us in 20th. Huddersfield beat Watford 2-1. They stay 5 points ahead of us in 19th. Birmingham was the only other one to lose. They slipped to 18th with a 3-1 defeat to Ipswich. They're 6 points ahead of us in 18th, as I mentioned. And Swansea won, Blackburn drew, Plymouth won. They're 17th, 16th and 15th, respectively, 7 and 8 points ahead of us. So they're not home and hosed, because they're 3 points, Stoke are 3 points better off than what we are. So they're only 5 points from relegation zone. So they're going to, that game against Plymouth just over a week's time, in it, midweek next week is going to be, that could be massive. We could have clawed them back since then. Right, I'm just going to read some of the three-word match reviews out then. Win our games, it's game on. Will fucking Volks is from Matt Surgeon. Matt Scully said, absolutely bloody brilliant. Ross Stevens, players fighting spirit. Hong Kong Owls, it was good. Yeah, it was more than good. It were fantastic. Billy Casper said, we battle harder. Yeah, agree on that one. Micah, bring on Rotherham. I'll be there at New York Stadium on Saturday. My away record isn't great following Sheffield Wednesday. So to be fair, I think most people would say that this season, though. We haven't seen many wins, have we, away from home? So it's not just me.
True.
So yeah, fingers crossed that changes. Daniel Hancock, the great escape. It would be as well. Like, again, when he came in, we were so far adrift. I think the 10 points, weren't it, was the biggest gap, I think. Or it got out to 12. Can't remember, but yeah. Mark C, ref was decent. Yeah, just mentioned it. Laura Webb played bloody fantastic. Adam Dallimore signed them up, obviously referencing Ugbo and Pervada. Big Jim, Danny Roll. Yeah, did loads more as well. So you can go on Twitter or X at WTRD Pod if you want to read some of those and get involved. Obviously, we do that after every single game on there. Right. Some of the players then that we've not perhaps spoken about. Well, we have spoken about him a little bit, but Paul Valentin, for me, he's playing with so much more freedom since Liam Palmer's come in, and he's allowing him, as you've referenced a few times already, to get forward. I think always in the back of the mind, he's got like, I've got to get back if it goes wrong. And when you're at the bottom of the league, it goes wrong more than it goes right. That's why you're down there. Now he's got that cover with Palmer, and he's probably been told, like, just express yourself a little bit more. We're seeing that, aren't we? Since that shift in formation, as you've mentioned, he's come on leaps and bounds. Because I think, I'll admit, I was a bit sceptical about him before. We all heard about his pace and what he can do, but he'd not really shown a great deal, had he?
No. To be honest, at the start, he looked like he was running around on ice skates, didn't he? He just were like running around and not really very his combination wasn't even that good. But he's been consistent last probably 6 to 7, 8 games, really. He's got that pace, and he looks to do what I think, what we all want Masaba to do, is just kick it into that space and run past him, which is what he does. He says, he sort of backs himself, doesn't he? I'm going to beat you. I've got pace. I'm going to beat you. And then I'm going to put ball in the box. But I noticed, like I said, even on goals yesterday and even in the last few games, if he goes for, he's the further forward player. But there were occasion yesterday where Palmer has played the ball. He played the ball from the right back position. And if you see the footage, Valentin actually starts dropping back into that right back area. So they've obviously been told to cover each other. When one goes, other one stays, and vice versa. So yeah, he's, and I, for some reason, because there was an interview with him as well after the game, And I'm sure he couldn't speak any English when he first came over. He sounds fluent. He's brilliant.
Do you know what? I was just going to reference that again. He spoke to Rob Staton on Radio Sheffield. So, you know, go and have a listen back to that one if you can get it on BBC Sounds. And he was saying that when he first came, he wasn't enjoying it, and he was quite open and saying that. He couldn't speak any English or very, very, very little English. So he couldn't understand. Obviously, I know he had Cisco there, but I suppose when Cisco left as well, that you know, I don't know how many Spanish speaking players we've actually got. I couldn't tell you how many can. So
I think Bambo can speak a bit because he speaks four or five languages, doesn't he?
Yeah.
So, I think Windass speaks a bit as well, to be honest.
Yeah, he tries. Yeah, but you know, you're limiting. I put myself in his shoes. Yeah. I mean, it'd be easy. It's probably easier as an English person going to Spain because there's probably more English speaking people in Spain than what there is the other way around.
So
I think people forget that sometimes that. Footballers are human at the end of the day. You know, yes, they play 90 minutes of football and football is an international language and everything else. But when Danny Rill's trying to, you know, when you're trying to change the style of play radically from one regime to another, and you don't understand, you know, what's been told of you, you're going to get things wrong and you're going to perhaps misinterpret things. I mean, it's probably things now, even though he can speak fairly good English, that he's going to misinterpret. But fair play. Yeah. By all accounts, he's having 2 hours of English lessons. I think that's a day.
He's picked it up very well. And to be honest, if his understanding of the game now with a German coach is better than when he had Cisco and that were his mate, then he doesn't say very much for Cisco, does it?
No. Like I said, I think people have to realise that sometimes that it's not just
absolutely. You
know, it's not just about the football side of things. It's about the person and him, his enjoyment and stuff. And like I said, he was very open, probably because of that. You know, I don't want to say language barrier, but you know, he just kind of opened up to Rob Staton, which like I said, I was quite critical of him early on in the season. You know, making a few mistakes, and I mean, again, it's his first time playing English football, and everyone says, don't they, that it's a lot different to other football on the continent and European football, especially Spanish football, the way that they play their game. So yeah, I'm more than impressed with him, to be honest. We've already talked about Jan Poveda. Anthony Mesaba, what did you make of his performance? Obviously, he's come off the back of probably a 10 out of 10 performance against Millwall, a goal and an assist. What did you make of him yesterday?
It wasn't his best. I would have actually probably subbed him a lot earlier than what he got subbed yesterday. I think Gassam has been a bit unlucky not to start, to be honest, but obviously Pervada's come in, so he's kind of pushed him out a little bit. He showed a little bit in glimpses, but I think sometimes he just tries to do too much, doesn't he? You just, you know, do what you're good at. And like last week against Millwall, beats a player, but he didn't actually have to skill past him. He kind of like just played it into space, ran past him, played it across for Ugbo and scored. So I think yourself referred to it earlier, where you know that's what you want to see him doing. Just beat like a bit like Valentin does. You know, just put it past the player and back yourself, because you're quick enough to beat probably most of the players you come up against. So you don't have to do 16 step overs and beat him 3 times. Get past him.
I agree. There were a time in the first half where he definitely did that. There was space behind, and he could have just knocked it past the defender. He would have beat him for pace, hands down, easily, because he'd have got a jump on him. But you know, he tried to do a bit of skill and everything. Masaba's one of those players that, like for example, Liam Palmer. He's a 7 out of 10. Every single week. I know last season he was probably more closer to an 8 and a 9, but you can guarantee that Liam Palmer will give you a 7 out of 10 performance every single time he puts that blue and white shirt on. Anthony Mesaba, he can give you a 10, like last week against Millwall, but equally he can give you a 5, do you know what I mean? And be very underwhelming and kind of not showing you. I think we have to be realistic though, because again, I keep referencing it. He plays for Sheffield Wednesday, we're 23rd in the Championship. Like, he ain't, you know, he's not. If he were as good as what we, or if he can kind of iron out all those mistakes in his game, he'd be worth about 10 million and probably playing, top of the champ or even bottom half of the Prem. You know, like he's got that sort of ability in him, but he's just not quite showing that. And I agree with you.
Yeah.
Half time, I would have subbed him off and just put Gassama on there, like for like. I do think they are very, very, very similar players. They blow hot and cold. Luckily, in recent weeks, when one's not been performing, the other one has. So it's almost like they've just swapped places, if you know what I mean. They've both been performing, interchangeably, if you know what I mean. So yeah, I was a little bit disappointed with him, especially off the back of the Millwall game. There were times where Johnson were picking the ball up and he was stopping to collect the ball from a standing start and just use your pace. I mean, look, it's easier said than done. We're asking someone to keep running and running and running as if they're a robot. It's easy when you stood in the stands and, you don't know how knackered they are. He could have been bollocks. That's why he's not tried to run through. But yeah, I mean, on the whole, I am impressed with Masaba, and I think there's definitely a player in there, and Danny Rill is probably the right person to try and get that out of him.
And you've got to sort of remember as well where you sort of followed into what we just said about Valentin is that it's his first year in English football. He's still quite young. He's learning the game. He's not probably played as many games as Valentin at senior level. So, you've got to kind of take them into consideration as well.
Yeah.
Coming from, Holland or wherever it was, playing in a team struggling at bottom of the league, there's a lot of different things that you can put into it. But at the end of the day, when he's on and it's great. But, you've got to find that consistency, I guess.
Yeah. One other player I want to talk about before we move on and talk about Rotherham that we take on next week is Michael Ahekwa. He's not played a great deal of football this season, but I feel like he's solid, and I've spoken before about I feel we need a Michael Ahekwa in the side personally. That older head, and I know Liam Palmer's older as well, but just someone that's solid. And I think there's always a place in the game for a header and a kicker. I'm probably doing Michael Ahekwa a little bit of disservice there. I think he's a bit better with his feet, but certainly in comparison to like a Deshaun Bernard, when Michael Ahekwa goes up for a header, there's not many times that he doesn't win that header, and he's one of those players that can just kind of alleviate the pressure and just do what's needed. He'll do that dirty foul and get the blue card if it was in, the cynical fouls.
That's it. He wins the headers, but for me, which I mean, I can't hear it, but I know when you see him when I'm watching game. He's the organizer, and I think he's actually helped Bernard in the last half a dozen games when he's played alongside him. When Bambo got sent off and then he's not been in the squad, because when Bambo were playing next to Bernard, Bambo's like a bit of a headless chuck, isn't he? And he's just running around and he uses his strength and his pace, but Ekwa's not got that pace, but he's got the organisation skill. So I think that's actually brought Bernard on a lot more as well in the sense of his game, and he just organises people around him. So yeah, definitely solid yesterday. Headers, like you say, header and a kicker, but organising, I think, is the big thing for we get from him.
Yeah, 100%. I think what is it people say now? A tackle is a result of a mistake or something along those lines. Like if you have to tackle all the time, it's because you've fucked up somewhere else. And you don't see him put any crunching tackles. He just puts himself in where he needs to be. He leans on the striker. He knows exactly what to do. He's been around the game for so long and playing at this sort of level. Bouncing between League One and Championship. So and he's been there and done that with Rotherham. All right, he's been relegated probably more times than he wants to have with Rotherham. But he knows what it's like to be in this sort of scenario and battling for every single point that you can get. So yeah, I'm whenever I see Michael Ahecker on the team sheet, I'm not looking and going, oh, fucking hell, like, you know, he's a liability. We think that when we see Bambo on there. I always think... I referred to Palmer as being that steady seven, and I feel like Michael Ahecker is exactly the same. You know, he could perhaps do a little bit more in the opposition box. You know, you'd like to think he'd use his height and his strength to perhaps, you know, score a couple of goals a season. So that's probably one criticism. But again, he's not played. He's, you know, a centre-back to get a couple of goals, they're normally playing 40 games a season, aren't they? He's not really had that opportunity. So maybe that's a little bit harsh. But yeah, I'm more than happy when Michael Ahecker was playing.
It'd be interesting to see who comes in for Bernard because of the suspension. I don't know if it's one or two games, but... personally, I'd prefer Dom to come back in rather than Bambo, but we'll see.
Yeah, we'll have to see. I mean, Dom's got previous, hasn't he, with Rotherham, scored a goal against them, didn't he, a couple of years back.
On his debut, yeah.
And that's a perfect segue into talking about the next game against Rotherham. Their manager, Liam Richardson, has been in for a few weeks. They sacked Matt Taylor, who were there for about a year after... That was after what's his face left, weren't it? To go to Derby. Paul Warne left, and he was for donkey's years, 6 years, I think he was there before that. Their form is awful. Six straight defeats, one win in 22. That came back on Boxing Day against Middlesbrough. Four straight defeats at home. They've only had three wins all season. They have all come at the New York Stadium. Norwich, Coventry, and as I've just mentioned, Middlesbrough. Hakeem Adofin, primarily centre-back, he's got four goals. He's their leading goal scorer, along with Tom Eaves, who's I think he's got four goals as well, but mainly comes off the bench. I've looked and I thought, fucking hell, they've used 33 players this season, because I know they've had a lot of injuries. But we have as well. We've used 33 players, so that's not But when you think about it, yeah, you've got, for us, Delgado, who's not played. I mean, Byers don't even play anymore. Backinson, he played a few games. He's not even here at the club. So there's players that we've moved on. Deves Vasquez, of course, Buckley. When you look at it, actually, we have used so many players. I mean, I've not compared that to other teams this season. I don't know what the average. Averages, but considering you can only register 25 senior players, and we've only got a couple of youngsters, you know, that is quite a lot that we've used. How big is this next game against Rotherham? I mean, obviously it's their cup final, so they're gonna get all flags out and everything. But how big is Saturday's game?
To be honest, I'm probably more confident at Bristol game than I am at Rotherham game, because it's just, you know, you've just reeled off them stats, and Charity Wednesday FC will walk into town. I think that's a massive game, even bigger than last week's at Millwall and yesterday's at Bristol. We've got to get the 3 points at Rotherham, especially given their poor form. I mean, I think they're realistically already down in some regards.
Yeah.
And we've just got to keep this momentum going that we've built up over the last four games, you know, three wins in four games. Let's make it 4 in 5. And then we've got a home game against Plymouth where, you know, then you win 5 out of 6. You know, that's, like you said earlier, it's promotion form, but we need it because we've only got 12 games. So I think Danny Rowell will do his, do his prep like he does every week for the team, and he'll select the team that does the job. I hope we stay with a 3-5-2. I hope that Dom comes in for Bernard.
Yeah,
I just don't know whether he will though, because he's only just come back to fitness, and other than that, I don't think I'd really change it, because you know we all know Bannon can create some. Pervaders creating stuff. Ugbo's on fire, as you say. Maybe Gassama and Masaba might switch, and then do you know what? Will Volks is one of the unsung heroes, because he just does nothing but shithouse the opposition all game, winds them up, he's in their ear, he's, you know, off the ball, he's even having banter with crowd when he's doing throw-ins, and you just need that kind of player in there. Like, I don't know whether you picked up on it at the game, but on the screen, watching it last night, when Gassama's by corner flag and he loses it, and then it goes out for another corner or something because he were dicking about with it. And Volks gives him an absolute serve. He proper gives him a proper serving as if to say, get rid of the fucking ball.
Yeah.
Like that bloke behind you. Fucking kicked it.
Yeah, but I think yeah, I think you're right on Volks. He is that player that you do need in your team just to. He's like that glue that holds everyone together. And as you said, you know, he's that one that'd be like, calm it down, just like you know, slow it down a little bit. That level head. I think
you need that in a game like against Rotherham because it's going to be frantic. It's going to be. They're going to come out all guns blazing. We know it's their Wembley trip, their bloody cup final, whatever it is. I think other than the force change of Bernard and maybe Masaba Gassama, I can't see changing lineup, to be honest.
No, I have to agree, really. You know, Ikogbo, he's the informed player at the moment, and he'll be itching to get on the score sheet. I mean, I'm just looking at recent meetings against Rotherham. We've actually fared quite well at the New York Stadium. Mm. To be honest, when you look at it, they beat us. I think back in 2020, that was the COVID season where they did the double over us. Oh, that means I've got to think about that goal that was it Ladapo that scored after the infamous Izzy Brown corner in injury time that we want to forget about. But no, just looking, you know, one, two, three, four. I mean, there's five wins in the last seven at the New York Stadium. You know, the 3-2 that we had in injury time, that were a fantastic game as well. So yeah, I'm looking forward to it, but like a bit like you, a bit apprehensive, really, because this is the proverbial banana skin in it. When you look at you know, they can't buy a win, sod's law that they'll turn up and do one over us. But I feel like we've got that with those players that you've been mentioning, Pervaders and your Masabas and Gassamas and obviously Ugbo, Bannon that can pick out a fantastic pass. We've got those players in there that can. They'll bring the doggedness. They'll bring the grit, and they'll want to make it a battle, Rotherham. But I feel like we've got the players, the technical ability with some of the players that'll be able to just knock it around and frustrate them. Obviously, there'll be a healthy away following. I say away; it's not really away. I'm closer to New York Stadium than to Hillsborough, so it's like an home game for me. I'll get home a lot sooner than what I normally do for a game at Hillsborough. But yeah, we'll make it. You know, loud and everything. It's only a tiny ground, isn't it, New York Stadium? Actually, no, I don't mind the New York Stadium. I think it's all right. No, for a, when you look at, it's enough for what they've got in it. Really, it's just a tiny ground,
But yeah, it'll still be a 1:30 morning kickoff for me. So I don't know about that, but yeah, I think if we approach the game like we did with Millwall and we get that early goal, I think. Their fans will, you know, go home or, you know, like Millwall did because Millwall fans turned on the team and then when we got that second goal, half of them left. So I think it's important that we get that first goal, get another goal.
The only thing is...
Like I say, I can't see...
Yeah, the only thing is, Neil, I feel like, whilst I agree, I feel like a lot of Rotherham fans just think that, well, they know they're down already. So... I don't think they'll leave. It'll almost be like siege mentality that you know they're expecting to get beat, and they'll you know they'll club together and almost you know there's been times where we're like laughing and joking and what have you where we're already 2-0 down, and sometimes you know I don't think they'll turn on them if we do go ahead. I think they'll probably try and you know think that they're still in the game unless of course it's 2 or 3-0 after 20 minutes and we've put the game to bed. But I think when you look at the games coming up, we always keep looking at that Leeds game and Ipswich as well that are not too far away. They've also got an international break after that. You know, we've already kind of penciled in 2-0s for those. So I think it's just imperative that these next two games now, you know, we were talking about the block of four. We've done the first two parts. We've done half the job. We've picked 6 points up out of his last two games. We've just got to finish it off now. a win and a draw out of his next two. I said we'd have 7 points out of his next three.
Yeah.
A win and a draw, however it comes. I just hope we get the win against Rotherham. I can't stand, I just can't stand Rotherham fans gloating and everything else because they've won. I mentioned it last time. Some Rotherham fans would rather take going down and beating Wednesday than they would staying up and losing to us on Saturday. That's
standard.
That's the way it is. right, we're going to wrap things up there, Neil. No, we're not. I need a score prediction from you for Saturday's game. What's the score going to be?
For Rotherham game, I'm going to go 3-1 to Wednesday.
Oh, 3-1. Come on. Go on. Who's going to score the first goal?
I think Ugbo's going to get another couple. We'll be 2-0 up at half-time. They'll get some scabby
deflected goal or something. Yeah.
And then it'll be 88th minute to seal it 3-1. And I'll go with Iekwa.
Fair enough. I'm
going to. He'll celebrate in front of their fans and there'll be all sorts of kicking off.
I'm going to go. I'm going to go super. I know what I've said, been a bit apprehensive. I'm going to go super positive. I'm going to go 4-0. Absolute demolition of the Millers.
Wow.
It's easy to say EK Ugbo to score first, but you've already gone for that one. Jan Pavard is going to open his account and get a goal and do his fist pump. He's going to score in the opposite end. He's going to run the full length of pitch back to away fans, do his fist pumping and whatever else and didn't Jan Pavard do a backflip or something to it when he scores? Or am I imagining that?
I don't know.
I'm sure he would. He would be that player to do it. To be honest.
We've not seen a Will Volks backflip, so we might be due one of them. You never know.
Yeah, looking at Iekwa, Volks, Smackle Smith.
Oh yeah, Volks played there as well, didn't he? Yeah,
he did. Yeah, so there's a few players that have played for Rotherham already. Just on that, you can see we were mentioning Paul Valentine being a human and everyone, football players are normal people. You can see why they do it, can't you? It's literally down the road. You can stay where you're living. It makes perfect sense. I'm sure there's a few of us that I don't think they've got any that were in our side. Richard Wood's moved on now, hasn't he? Or is he still there? He's moved on, and is it Donny?
Yeah.
Anyway.
Yeah, I don't know where. Is he still playing? He must be at least 48.
irrelevant. Right, I'm going to wrap things up. Neil, I hope you've enjoyed it, mate. I've certainly enjoyed it. Anyway, it's been a good laugh.
Yeah, absolute pleasure. Honestly, thanks for accommodating me with the time difference. I know Freddie will get you up and about earlier on Sunday morning anyway, but appreciate that. And anytime. And just before I finish, I'll give a shout out to Chris, who you had on a few weeks ago, because he did to me. A couple of Aussie mates down here, Jamie as well, and Scott. So yeah, and I suppose I'll give a shout out to my cousin Sam, but It rang me at midnight last night and singing Deshaun Bernard down the phone to me and I were asleep, so I weren't very happy.
Well, it could have been worse, I guess. Right. Magic. Neil, thanks very much for it. Do really appreciate it. I hope everyone's enjoyed listening to this. If you want to listen to more of us, you can listen to Extra Time. Head over to patreon.com/WTIDpod. I'm going to say we're going to be talking about you and your life in Australia and following Sheffield Wednesday. We've already done it. We did it yesterday. So,
we already did it. but we know it's coming.
Yeah. So you can listen to that. Some great stories from yourself, from your time following Sheffield Wednesday from the other side of the world. Make sure you head over to patreon.com and listen to that. There is a 7-day free trial, so there's no excuse not to go and listen to it. Thank you very much, everyone. And we'll see you all next week. Cheers, guys.
The TalkSport Fan Network is proudly teaming up with Three for Mental Health Awareness Week this year. As football fans, we often pride ourselves on knowing everything, from which substitution can turn the game around to the quickest route home to beat the crowds. However, when it comes to discussing feelings with our friends, we might not always feel as confident. That's why we're here to equip you with the right tools so you can reach out to those who can help. If your mates are struggling, let them know that the Samaritans are free to call on 116 123. That's 116 123. They are there to listen without judgment or pressure, 24/7, 365 days of the year. Let's all take a moment to talk more than football.
Away days are great, but there's nothing quite like playing at home. The same goes for McDonald's. Maximize your home ground advantage with McDelivery. Order now on the McDonald's app. At participating restaurants, 18 plus, serving times, delivery fee and terms apply. See mcdonalds.com.
This podcast is proud to be part of the TalkSport Fan Network.
TalkSport. Powered by fans.